I'm Carrie Thompson, and you're listening to First File, a special edition of Playback that explores what it's like to start out in the rough and tumble world of public radio. Our guest today is NPR senior national correspondent, Linda Wertheimer, who's worked at NPR a long, long time. And how long is long?
I've worked at NPR for almost 40 years. It'll be 40 years next year.
And that means Linda started at NPR pretty much at the dawn of time, before NPR was even on the air. Back when NPR and most of the news networks were run, no, not by dinosaurs, but by guys. So, Linda came up with a strategy for making it in a man's world.
If what you were talking about were consumer issues, that had a kind of a feminine side to it. And I thought that would be a way to get in.
And so it was. We'll take a look at some shrewd moves concocted by Ms. Wertheimer in this episode of Playback and listen to a bit of her network debut as Linda explains it all to our very own Maureen Clements. So, to put everything in perspective, here are a few fun facts. NPR went on the air with its flagship program, All Things Considered, in May of 1971. The Vietnam War was in full swing. Nixon was president. No one had heard of Watergate. And the folks at NPR were hard at work getting the first show on the air.
We had a very small staff. We had a host and editor who came to us from the New York Times. We had some reporters, all of them were guys. We started on May Day of 1971, which was the day of tremendous anti-war demonstrations. You know, lots and lots of people came out for it. All the bridges were closed. There was no vehicular traffic, supposedly, in Washington except for buses. And people kept lobbing tear gas canisters into the buses. It was just an astonishing day.
Traffic has stopped. Here come the police. 1, 2, 3, 4 police on motor scooters. One demonstrator knocked down by a motor scooter policeman. Anger now. Anger of the young people.
You have to think about what things were like for women in 1971. Things really began to turn around for women in the news business in 1974. But in 1971, it hadn't happened yet. And there were very, very few women who were on the air. I had worked at WCBS News Radio, you know, from the time it started as a news radio station in New York. There were two women reporters. Both of them were very good. Both of them, we cut them out of their pieces and revoiced the pieces with men because it was the view that women were not credible delivering the news. I had been told that. I applied for a job at NBC in New York and was told that. When I went to work for WCBS, I was a lowly production assistant, and I produced back of the book features for them. But there was no question of women being on the air unless they were experts in something. Other than that, you know, no women. So when I went to work for NPR, I had very high hopes that this would be a breakthrough sort of place, and it was. Women could, you know, work. Women could get on the air. So that was my big ambition, was to get on the air. And I spent a lot of time trying to think about how I could push past the fact that they had women working for them, but they didn't have a lot of, but most of the on-air people were still guys. You know, the thing that thinking about the first piece I ever did does for me is that it happened as quickly as it did. I mean, that's just half a year away from the beginning of the program. And things were moving very fast. People were changing roles all the time. Everybody was sort of trying to shake them and see what can come out, what can you do, what else can you do. And, of course, I had my eye on being on the air from the very first minute.
So this first piece that you did is about botulism, and in the bon vivant vichyssoise soup, and it's a 7-minute long piece where you talk with all kinds of experts about what we have a clip here, so we can play it for you.
Oh God, that's frightening.
We asked Linda Wertheimer to find out more about botulism for us, and she filed this report.
Botulism is a kind of food poisoning. It is extremely deadly. In fact, in a can of corn which is contaminated with botulin toxin, or poison, only one kernel of corn would be sufficient to cause death in man. If contaminated food is eaten, symptoms begin to develop within 18 to 36 hours.
Well, you know, I'm like, whenever I hear something that I've done, which is really, really old, I'm just so relieved that I was able to form a coherent sentence. You know, that I sound almost like myself now, though, I think.
You do. I think you sound great.
A little formal.
Really professional. I really, it's sort of a little bit of a boring topic, but it was very informative. And
well, the thing you have to remember is that back, you know, that was the beginning of Ralph Nader and the whole consumer movement, and there was a tremendous amount of attention to clean food, and that I saw that as a wedge, a strategic wedge, because if what you were talking about were consumer issues, that had a kind of a feminine, you know, side to it. It was like products and shopping and using things and so forth. And I thought that would be a way to get in. So I proposed it. And of course, it was hugely, it was big at the time. And everybody was hiring consumer reporters. And there were all kinds of people working, doing just that. So it did. It did work for me. And I got out of it just as soon as I possibly could. What I did was I covered all the consumer legislation that was passed in the Congress. I insisted that was my job. It was what I do. And so I was going to do it. And then I kind of just eased my way into covering the Congress and politics, which is where I was headed all along.
So this clip, here you're talking about the implications of, you know, soup and things like that.
However, Mr. Lennington suggests that a few simple rules should be followed by consumers.
I think that it is incumbent upon every housewife to examine any canned goods prior to opening it.
The thing that I remember, of course, you know, my dad was in the grocery business, and I come from a part of the country where everybody cans things all the time, and botulism was a real, you know, concern. So I actually knew quite a lot about it from just being alive in New Mexico. but that guy today would no more say housewife, you know, than he would fly to the moon. The times have changed, but that's where it was.
You know, you had mentioned New Mexico. How did you decide that you wanted to become a journalist?
I had always been interested in broadcast journalism on the radio because of CBS and Edward R. Murrow and all of that. You know, I was born right before the war ended, so I had and we were way out in the end of the country, so there was no TV for many years, and I had always been interested in radio news because that's what I knew. And I one day saw Pauline Frederick, who worked for NBC. She covered the United Nations. I saw Pauline Frederick on television. This, of course, was much later. I was a teenager, and she was reporting on the invasion of Hungary from the steps of the United Nations building. And I said to my mother, "That's a woman." And my mother said, "Good, very good." But what I meant was, it's a woman doing that work. I never knew women did that work. Women can do that work. So that's when I just stayed on the same beam from the time I was about 14 or 15 years old.
Did you ever think that NPR was going to become the success that it has? Or did you ever think that you were going to become as successful as you did?
I think that it, you know, back in the day, there were so many excellent sources of news that National Public Radio has had boosts from odd sorts of things, and you know, the most recent being that nobody out there is doing broadcast news in quite the way we do. I mean, you know, kind of straight-ahead news as opposed to the way cable news covers the news. But there have been other things, like NPR was very much involved in the lobbying for AM and FM radio in cars. And when we got that, we were in a great position to take advantage of it. When President Reagan decided to deregulate radio stations, then all of the regulations that said that they had to have a certain component of news were gone. So they could just do wall-to-wall talk or wall-to-wall music, or, you know, they could do whatever got them, earned them the most money. And that was not news, because news is a loss leader. It's expensive to produce. That worked for us. And then the Internet and the, you know, the sort of decline of television news and the kind of the balkanization of news, all of that has worked for us. So we've been kind of in the right place. It's not clear to me how long this lasts, but I'm just so relieved that it's lasted for my professional lifetime. And it's, I have loved it. I mean, I've covered presidential campaigns and I've anchored election nights and I've, you know, done all that stuff in many iterations, and I've loved it. I do love politics. I mean, right now we're in kind of a bad patch, I think. Because everybody's, you know, there's such a lot of nasty tussling going on, but it's so incredibly important, and I've loved doing it. I was blessed with parents who continually told me that I could do whatever I wanted to, so that I believed it. And then I went to a women's college where I was told that women can do anything, that, you know, there is absolutely no reason to believe that you can't do whatever men can do. And I was looking at women who were presidents of everything, women who were chairman of everything, women who were the big shooters throughout the whole community. And I remember thinking that I would never let that go again. I would just never step back. And so I never did.
NPR senior national correspondent, Linda Wertheimer.
Just a small town girl, living in a lonely world.
Next month, we are back with a strange bit of broadcast news.
In financial news today, the Australian publishing magnate, Mr. Rupert Murdoch, is reported to be preparing a bid for the purchase of the National Public Radio System, a non-profit radio network in the United States.
More on that startling development in our April edition of Playback. And we didn't get rid of all the guys who work at NPR. In fact, we'd like to thank three who helped with this month's podcast: Mr. Robert Speer, the award-winning Mr. Michael Katziff, and the multi-talented Arnie Seipel. I'm Carrie Thompson, and you're listening to Playback.